Full Service Radio is supported by Compass, the future of real estate in the Metro DC area and beyond. Discover more at compass.com.
Full Service Radio.
Live from Washington, D.C. at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, you're listening to The Tidbit, brought to you by Curate. I'm your host and the CEO of Curate, Kim Bryden. Do you run a small business or have dreams to start one? Well, here at The Tidbit, we've got your back. Each week, we talk through tidbits of knowledge around starting or running a small business with a food and beverage lens. On this show, we've talked through foundational elements of starting up, like understanding how to register as a B Corp, to becoming market ready through building your brand narrative, to creating that internal stability through resiliency and the creative process. But what happens after you've begun? How do you stay fresh, relevant, and what does it take to move from one step to the next in growing your business? It definitely takes a special someone, a special team to take a classic food item and bring a new vibe to its creation. The nostalgia of a menu that you fondly recognize and love, but with that unique spin. This is what our guest today has a special knack for crafting. But before welcoming him to The Tidbit, I'd like to highlight a recent menu iteration that took the internet by storm this past month. Our beloved International House of Pancakes, IHOP, changed its name to IHOB. Everyone assumed that the B would stand for breakfast. Some even joked that the B was for blockchain, taking over the latest craze on that. But what no one saw coming was the real answer to the name and fundamental business switch. Burgers. International House of Burgers? IHOP is now changing its name to IHOB. And in a Fast Company article, the author quipped, Adweek gave credit to IHOB for responding well to the decreasing popularity of pancakes and the rising interest in burgers, and for making funny on the social medias. But you know, likes and retweets aren't going to keep the lights on in the stores. And speaking of social media, Solu City asked Wendy's on their thought on this burger switch from pancakes to burgers. And Wendy's, I don't know if you're following them or not, but they are quite sassy on social media. They responded, let me take a step back. At Solu City quoted, so at Wendy's, you just gonna let at IHOB sell burgers on your block? And Wendy's wrote back, not really afraid of the burgers from a place that decided pancakes were too hard. Harsh. So where did they go wrong? I would have loved to sit in on those meetings where marketers and the research development team members were coming up with this new brand. Why switch from a beloved brand, the International House of Pancakes, to burgers? It's fascinating. And so if any big brands are going through a need for a refresh, I definitely suggest giving me or our guest today a call. We have a lot of lessons learned from working alongside savvy small business owners who have definitely learned with customer feedback in mind. And I'm just completely inspired by entrepreneurs who are listening to their end user and really build a brand and build a business with that community feedback. And today in studio, we're sitting down with Andrew Dana, the owner of the acclaimed Timber Pizza Company, a featured best new restaurant in Bon Appetit last year, and Call Your Mother Deli. So we're going to be taking a quick break now, and we'll be right back with Andrew. Yo, You're listening to The Tidbit, and we're here with Andrew Dana, owner of Timber Pizza Company and Call Your Mother Deli.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Andrew.
Hello.
I've had the privilege of viewing your journey since its beginnings, and one of my favorite aspects about your personality that's really infused into your operations is your thorough research and desire to learn. Always be learning. And that aspect of crafting a crave-worthy menu. So I'm wondering if you can tell us a bit about your pizza journey prior to serving Timber's first pie.
Yeah, I think it started at about 4 years old, you know, when I had babysitters. We'd get Pizza Hut or Domino's every day.
Ooh.
No, JK. I went to grad school in New York, thought I wanted to do sports marketing. Sort of quickly learned, I think it was like the first month of grad school, like, this is not for me. And I was living in Brooklyn and just eating at all these pizza places. And I just sort of fell in love with it. Like the pizza and the culture and sort of how they were like the heartbeat of the neighborhood. So I wish I could say like at the time I knew that I was doing market research, but I was just like going because I loved it. And then I moved back to DC and like started a job. But really couldn't get sort of those vibes and that like, you know, heart of the neighborhood sort of ethos out of my head. So, you know, eventually quit my job and started Timber and, you know, took tons of trips up to New York and to Charlottesville and ate at every pizza place in the area.
Up and down the East Coast.
My sister lives in San Francisco, so a couple trips out there eating at sort of like the hot pizza restaurants. And I think what we do is we look for inspiration at other pizza restaurants, but then we look for inspiration at sort of any restaurant or anything. So wherever we go, we're sort of always keeping our eyes wide open, seeing what's working, what we like. Let me go from there.
You had a very interesting trip a little bit west from here. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that pizza pie?
Yeah. I had heard whispers that at one time McDonald's served pizza. And I just found that incredibly interesting that this place that's sort of all over the world, wherever you go, you get the same experience and people love it and it's, you know, whatever. And so did a little research and found that there was two McDonald's left in the country still serving pizza, one in West Virginia, one in Ohio. So I knew I had to try it, had to see what this, you know, behemoth of a company did when they did pizza and if it was good and how they served it. So got in the car and I think it was about 8 hours.
Whoa.
Yeah. No, we take this job very seriously. It was pretty bad. I'm pretty sure it was just Red Baron that they were microwaving. So not totally worth the trip. But honestly, most of the trips that we have done, you know, we'll take one or two things away from it, whether it's an ingredient or a style of service or something. But I'd say the most sort of beneficial thing that's come away from a lot of these trips is like a confidence, right? Where we're like, oh, if this is like the stud in this area and this is what they're doing, like we can do this. So what came out of that West Virginia trip was like, good grief, if this is the pizza that McDonald's is serving and people are coming here for this, like we got this.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I think a lot of folks when starting food businesses create a product that their family and friends love, mm-hmm. and then assume, well, everyone's going to love this because my family and friends say that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And the thoroughness and intention that you've put into the product development by not just seeing what are my competitors or the landscape in the proximity of where I'm opening, but even nationwide from high to low.
Yeah,
McDonald's
for sure.
To that hot spot in San Francisco.
For sure. No, it's easy to like live in a bubble of what your friends are saying or what like-minded people think and like, and especially when you're in the restaurant industry and you're around chefs, I feel like it's easy to sort of get like caught up in sort of a chefy bubble. And you have to think about sort of like the big picture. What is like sort of the average guy who's eating pizza on a Tuesday night want? And we thought about that sort of very carefully. And we were very sort of strategic in that, like, everything on the menu you should be able to pronounce and you should know what it is. And you shouldn't have to ask the waiter, hey, what's these three toppings on this pizza? Because I experienced that myself. I go to an Italian pizza restaurant. I'm like, what the hell is all this stuff? Like, I don't even know what this is. And if you're going out to eat and have an experience, I think you want to feel like confident in what you're ordering. You don't want to sort of feel like a dummy because you don't know stuff. So I think we thought pretty thoroughly through all that.
Amazing. And just to back up even more, so you had that first pie, or before you started creating that first pie, you had this whole research and development process. And then you didn't start with a brick and mortar. You actually started at farmers markets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now your pizza shop is featured as one of the best new restaurants in the United States. But this trajectory is a lot, is definitely a trajectory a lot of small businesses strive to achieve, mm-hmm. going from farmers market to amazing accolades. Right. So I'm wondering what foundations you set up for yourself and for the business in order to achieve these milestones. You went from farmers market to a robust on-site catering operation, mm-hmm. for events, to your Hoppin brick and mortar, mm-hmm. Which, if you haven't been, Timber Pizza Company is in Petworth, which is a little bit more of a residential neighborhood of the city, about 10 minutes north of where we are right now at the Line Hotel. So anyway, Andrew, tell mm-hmm. us your secrets from farmers market to today. What are these foundations that you've created?
Tough question. I think sort of like our motto and what we do every day has never really changed. So when Chris and I launched the business, it was May 2014, we had zero cooking experience, right? So we knew what we wanted our pizza to be like, and we had done a ton of trial and error and come up with a pretty good recipe, but like we didn't know how to run a kitchen or anything, right? So what our sort of our differentiator was that we worked really, 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 really hard. We were really, really, really nice, and we gave an F. And that has sort of stayed the model ever since, right? And I think if you show up every single day and just like bust your ass every single day, and if you're just like killing it with the people and super nice, and if you like truly give an F, which we really do, right? Like we would just like, we don't serve something that we don't believe in, and we're never like, it's good enough. Like we just don't have that. So we showed up and did that every single day at the farmers markets. And from there, we built a following and built a brand. And then we signed a lease and we started to still build a bigger buzz doing that same thing. It was trying hard, being nice, and giving an F every single day. And then we opened the restaurant and sort of have carried that through and on catering. And, you know, we do a lot of weddings now, and it's that sort of motto works everywhere. Yeah, it sort of works everywhere. And it's not rocket science. There's no sort of like secret sauce. But if you do those three things every single day, you sort of like are creating your own luck a little bit, right? And so, yeah, all of this sort of takes some luck and the right person seeing you in the right place. And that helps lead to accolades, which leads to better business. But I don't think you have that luck unless you're sort of bringing the heat every single day and truly, truly caring about what you're doing. So that's
absolutely
the secret sauce.
In the online ad space, there's a term called retargeting with ads, in that if you're shopping for shoes and then suddenly you're on Facebook, a shoe ad will pop up. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times in the food space, especially when you're creating that in real life experience, it matters where you're showing up and in front of whom. And I love that you have this diversification of revenue streams, mm-hmm. from farmers market to catering to brick and mortar, because it allows you to show up where a customer is,
yeah.
in multiple locations.
Yeah, for sure.
Did you ever think that that was going to be a part of your business model?
Yeah, I mean, so we came at this with business backgrounds, not food backgrounds. And so I think a lot of times when somebody's getting into the food industry, they come from a food background and they're like, I make the best muffins and that's all that matters. And as long as I make the best muffins, everything will take care of itself. Whereas we didn't come at it from that background, and we weren't making the best pizza from day one. It sort of took us meeting Daniela and her taking our stuff to another level to get there. So just thinking through a business model and plan, we're like, we're selling at farmers markets and it's great revenue, but we know what it's like when it rains. And you can like lose 50% of your sales in a month if the weather's not good. And the restaurant, you know, there's slow nights, and in the summer people are out of town in Petworth. And so we're just sort of thinking about how do we sort of, you know, lessen the risk, which is really what it's all about. And so I think from very, very early on, we were like, how do we create as many revenue streams as possible? How do we sell frozen dough out of local stores? How do we get this catering off the ground? How do we do the farmers market? So, yeah, I think that was sort of because we came from a business background and not a food background, and because everybody was like, what are these two jabronis who have no food background doing? We're like, we have to make this work. And to do that, we have to create a lot of revenue streams and sort of spread the risk out. So, yeah.
And on that point of who are these two jabronis opening a pizza company, to your point around quality control and that being such a standard of yours, I mean, I've seen you come into either your brick and mortar or show up at the farmer's market and really thoroughly look at the pies that are coming out. So is that something that you've established almost like a standard operating procedure around?
Yep. Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. So, you know, in the 4 years, our business has, you know, grown immensely and we're catering weddings and opening new restaurants and all this stuff. But none of that's possible if the pizza's not great, right? So that is the foundation and the core of our business. And so I think we have a laser focus on number one priority. Like, we can't open the Call Your Mother Deli and we can't open the second Boston. We're not going to cater all these weddings if the pizza's not great every single day. So it's number one priority. And we, you know, our expo checks the bottom of every pizza, which I don't think a lot of pizza restaurants do. They see the top and they think that's good enough. So our pizzas get a 360 degree sort of
inspection
before they go out. And we're sort of, you know, Danny does weekly ongoing trainings with the kitchen, and it's a number one priority. And I think
Danny
it's sort of,
is your head chef.
Yeah, head chef and business partner and boss lady. So, yeah, it's like none of it's possible if the pizza's not great. And I think it's easy to sort of forget about what your core business is, especially as you're growing, right? And like you're opening new locations and you're doing parties and you're doing dinners and all this stuff. And it's sort of easy to forget, like, at our core, we're a pizza business and the pizza has to be effing great every single day. So yeah, we should like put that on the wall in our office or something. But yeah, so it's like every pizza gets inspected, and yeah, standards have to be high, or else, because it's not gonna happen overnight, right? Like the pizza's not gonna go from really good to crap overnight. But we talk about sort of that like 1% change every single day, and it's like sort of happens, and then like a month later, you're like, whoa, what the hell are we serving, right? And so you sort of have to constantly keep your eye on it, constantly retrain, constantly make sure the standards are being met. Because if you just have that 1% change every day because you're focusing on the new location or the new restaurant or whatever, all of a sudden you open your eyes and sales are down and the pizzas look like crap and you're like, whoa, how did we get here? So
absolutely.
Major effort every single day to keep standards high and keep serving that bomb pie.
And you just briefly mentioned Call Your Mother Deli. Mm-hmm. We are sitting down with Andrew Dana, the owner of Timber Pizza Company, and Call Your Mother Deli. And so I'd love to just take a quick break here, but then when we come back, talk about how you're expanding into this brand new concept, even away from pizza. Yeah,
bagels.
Woo! Taking a quick break and we'll be right back.
Original music by P. Morris here on The Break. DC-born producer living in LA right now. Find him online, soundcloud.com/P. Morris. The song is called Gemini. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Tidbit, and we're here with Andrew Dana, the owner of Timber Pizza Company and Call Your Mother Deli. Hello, Andrew.
Yo, yo.
On The Tidbit, we discuss tidbits of knowledge around starting and running a business, and I'd like to get into the nitty-gritty with you.
Let's do it.
You are on a similar-ish trajectory now with Call Your Mother, and I'm wondering if you are also approaching Call Your Mother's launch in a similar fashion to Timber, because you are starting at farmers markets right now before opening your brick and mortar. So what lessons did you learn from Timber's launch that you're wanting to put into place with Call Your Mother, or things that you learned that you're definitely not going to do?
Well, the model worked for Timber, right? And it's like, the farmers markets are a great place to create a buzz, to create a foundation of sort of brand followers, a place to perfect your product. It's a place to work on different systems and procedures and see what works and doesn't work. And that's not to say you don't have to like be great at these farmers markets, because you do. But there is a certain level where people are like slightly more forgiving at a farmer's market than they are at a brick and mortar. They're shopping for their veggies. It's Saturday morning, you know, it's, so you have to have a great product, but you can also sort of test stuff out there and sort of see what works and doesn't work.
A great place for market research. Even down to the customers. I mean, what type of person
for sure
is showing up week over week?
Absolutely.
And how does that form your brand narrative?
Exactly. And if you look at Timber, like if we had gone straight to a restaurant, I don't know if we would have understood how important speed is. And we learned that at the farmers markets that like every second matters. And if somebody waits, you know, the difference between waiting 5 and 7 minutes for a pizza can be all the difference somebody having a great and a bad experience. And if you've been to Timber and Petworth, we don't like have table service. We just sort of open the floodgates and let everybody order. And if we had done that without sort of that training ground of the farmers markets, waits would have been horrible and it would have just been a different experience. So you don't totally know what you're going to learn at these farmers markets and what sort of the ordering habits are and sort of what people's expectations are for wait times and all that. So we're working through that at Call Your Mother at the DuPont and Silver Spring farmers market right now, that like,
which are two very different farmers markets.
For sure.
DuPont being the longest standing, most popular, most bomping farmers market downtown, and Silver Spring being more of a suburban, you know, DC suburb market.
Yeah, and it's like an older crowd, more families. DuPont is very much that sort of whatever millennial, whatever you want
young
to call
it.
Yeah, and who's like Instagramming their bagels and stuff like that. So we're learning a lot, and then it gets back to that different revenue streams talk that we had, right? And we're going to follow a very similar model at Call Your Mother, that we want to do farmers markets and catering and wholesale and have the restaurant. So I love farmers markets. It's one, it's a great place to make relationships with local farmers and purveyors, which we do, and is part of the reason that I think our products are really good, is that we're finding the best sort of local, tastiest, freshest ingredients. And being at these farmers markets helps with that. Two, it's great brand exposure. It's like one of the few ways of marketing where you're actually making money, you're not spending money. Mm. So that helps, that you can be seen all over town and people can experience your product and learn about it, and you're actually making money instead of spending money. So we don't have like a marketing budget, but these farmers markets is definitely the best form of marketing.
Mm-hmm. And because, like you just mentioned, you're establishing these relationships with other like-minded small business owners. In that network effect.
For sure. 100%.
I mean, the farmers market is like a built-in community.
Yep.
And you're all amplifying each other.
Absolutely. So I love it. Pretty much any business we ever start, I want to follow this model. It's going great so far. We've been at the farmers markets 2.5 months for Call Your Mother, and we've sold out at every market we've ever done. And our product has gotten better every week, I think. And we're just getting more ready for the restaurant opening. And which I haven't mentioned, it's a great place to train staff, right? Because a lot of the training for restaurants is sort of very like hypothetical, and you're sort of doing like role playing. But at the markets, it's real life, and you're really dealing with customers, and you see the questions that they're asking and sort of what their expectations are. So it's a great place to train staff. So when the restaurant opens, there's people who sort of know your product really well and know the story behind your business really well and who've been working for you for a couple months. And they can be great sort of brand ambassadors at the front of the business.
And you mentioned earlier that with Timber Pizza, you wanted to make sure the menu had all ingredients and names that people could pronounce.
For sure.
And I imagine the farmers market allows for that iteration of how are people reading the menu and talking about the product, which then informs your...
For sure. And like, what are they... Oh, why don't you have this? Or what's this? And, you know, we want to sort of do the timberization of the bagel menu, where it's like... Yeah, we do some creative takes on stuff and maybe use some ingredients that you're not totally used to seeing on a bagel or a pizza, but you know what it is and you can sort of picture it, and there's no sort of like crazy ingredients. So I think we do that well at Timber. You know, we have like nectarines on a summer pizza, which I don't think a lot of people have seen, but they know what a nectarine is, so they can dig it and try it.
Absolutely.
We want to do similar things with the bagel. So
I don't want to gloss over a major part of scaling up a business, because going from farmers market to opening even the catering operation to brick and mortar requires a lot of capital and access to capital. And moving through each of these phases can be quite costly. So can you tell us a bit more about capital needs realistically when starting a food operation?
Yeah, I mean, one, I think everything costs more money than people sort of expect or are looking to spend. And so I think that's part of the reason we started as farmers markets businesses for timber and for Call Your Mother. And for timber, we had looked at a couple locations before we decided to start as a mobile business. And we were basically like, whoa, shit, like this is a big bite and we're not totally sure what we're doing. So we were able to start the mobile business with just personal savings and, you know, risky, and it was a good chunk of change, but it wasn't going to like change our lives if we lost that amount of money. And it was a great way to sort of learn the ropes and get more confident, learn what we were doing. And then to open a restaurant, it is expensive. And unless you come from some family that has boatloads of money, you're going to have to find a way to fund this project, whether you're taking out a bank loan or giving away equity or whatever. So we raise money through, you know, they say restaurants is the three F's: friends, families, and fools. So we we raise all through friends and families.
Love
no,
money.
No fools. Yeah. But we did raise some money from people that were outside of our families for the first one. And I don't think we would have been able to do that if we hadn't started at the farmer's market, right? So we had a brand we could point to. We had a following and all that stuff, which made raising money for the restaurant much, much easier. So, you know, we sort of asked around the industry a lot and sort of saw what, you know, industry standard was. And a lot of places do sort of a waterfall deal where they raise a certain amount of money, pay back the investors at a faster rate, and then once they pay them back, it sort of flips the sort of the ownership equity. So it'll go from like 20-80 to 80-20 the other way.
Mm-hmm.
So we did something very similar to that. And then we have a new investor for Call Your Mother who's an equity partner. So we like raising money from individuals as equity partners. One, we like that they believe in us and they're really a part of the family. And then two, they can be strategic partners. So our investor for Call Your Mother, Jeff Zients, he's very much like a business partner and can be a strategic partner, which I don't think you're going to get when you take sort of like an SBA loan from a
right.
local bank or something.
Absolutely. Well, this is fantastic. And I want to go back to a point that you made earlier around the whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yes, at the end of the day, it's the product of mm-hmm. the bagel, of the pizza. But what I truly believe sets you apart is these other experiential factors that you bring to your locations. And so when you walk into Timber, there's just this fantastic vibe. And, you know, it's even down to the playlist. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering what sort of emphasis you place on vibe setting versus recipe development.
I mean, we say 50-50. So we truly do say it's 50% vibes, 50% food. And that's for a couple of reasons. Like, one, you can almost get anything you want delivered to your house now, right? Like, there's not a ton of reasons to eat out unless you're looking for an experience, right? So you could get our pizza delivered to you through Caviar or through Postmates or something like that. And I think we understood that, and that people, when they dine out, are truly like looking for an experience. It's like, so the old dinner and a show. So heavy emphasis on vibe from day one. And we did that strategically through thinking about like how we even wanted the diners to eat. And so all of our seating is communal, and we really want it to feel like a neighborhood hangout. So if you come to Timber and you know, there's a very good chance you're going to be sharing a table with strangers. And we really liked that and love the idea of rubbing elbows with strangers and breaking bread with strangers and sort of getting to know new people. So yeah, we thought about through top to bottom, from lighting to playlists. Like, every playlist at Timber, I curate every single song. It's not like I'm putting on like a Spotify radio station that I dig. Like, I truly pick every single song that goes on. And so, yeah, I mean, truly 50-50. It's like, I wouldn't want to say it's more important than the food, but it is like just as important, because you know, a bad experience with a waiter or somebody taking your order or something like that, like, the food can be great, but once you're sort of already soured, it's already over. I talk about it in like sort of like a pie graph, and that like you walk in and there's like a whole circle that you have to like fill in for somebody to leave satisfied. And like, you can start from your first touch point. So if the person who greets you when you walk in is super friendly and asks you about your day, like, you start to shade away that circle, right? And the more you can shade away before the food comes, the better, because then the food is good too. And it's boom, you can close the circle. Whereas if you have a couple bad experiences and the person at the front door, you're waiting at the front door, you don't know what the hell's going on, the person's sort of gruff with you, now all of a sudden the food has to be like a 15 out of 10, which is impossible, right? So very, very important. I always say vibes, hashtag vibes.
Incredible. Well, thank you. And I'm wondering if our listener wants to meet you, check out Timber, find out more about Call Your Mother, how can people find you?
Yeah, I mean, we're on the internet. We have websites. I'd say Instagram's probably the place where we post like sort of most of our happenings. So it's Timber Pizza Co. at Timber Pizza Co. And then on Instagram, it's at Call Your Mother Deli. If you want to holler at me, Andrew at timberpizza.com.
Amazing.
I still manage my email. For now. JK.
Thank you. This is fantastic. And I just really want to emphasize again, listener, if you're starting or in the process of running your small business, iterating with these, how can you test your market in the least risky way possible? How can you understand training your staff, what your customers are saying to you? What are these tests that you can do while also making money? It's possible.
Bang, bang.
Scaling up and diversifying your revenue streams are super important, and understanding how each one of those components are lead generators for each other, and how by showing up where your customer is in each of those areas, I want to also just re-mention how you were saying with Call Your Mother Deli, it'll be brick and mortar, farmer's market, and maybe even wholesale.
Yeah, wholesale, catering, you know.
Yeah. And that's showing up in a different location.
You got a bar mitzvah coming up or anything like that? We got you. Bagel platters.
Absolutely. It's fantastic. So this show, if you didn't know, is based on a bi-weekly newsletter that we send out at Curate called The Tidbit. In it, we discuss what we're reading, eating, drinking, listening to, and learning. 5 quick morsels of information to get you in the know and on top of your game. So if you're eager to learn more tidbits of knowledge about the food and beverage industry or entrepreneurship lessons learned, sign up today. Head over to curate.co and sign up, curate.co. Until next time, everyone, remember to scale thoughtfully and source locally.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.